Okay.
Okay, today we're going to interview Russell Cheng of the University of Southampton in the United Kingdom. We're doing this for the Simulation Archive that is located at North Carolina State University Library. It's being done on December 12th, 2012 in Berlin at the Winter Simulation Conference. I, Bob Sargent, are one of the interviewers from Syracuse University, and the other interviewer is Jim Wilson from North Carolina State University. And so we thank you, Russell, for agreeing to come and do a recording so that we can put in the simulation archives.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, Bob, Jim. It's hopefully going to be something that I can...
No, there's no need to worry about that. I'll just make sure.
And so, why don't you just give us a sentence or two where you grew up, and then secondly, tell us where you went to college and what you studied and the dates of that, please.
Oh, sure, yes. Really, by training, I started out as a mathematician, so my first undergraduate degree was in straight mathematics. At that stage, I began to develop an interest in statistics, partly at the suggestion of a much older brother who was an engineer, who said there was a great shortage of statisticians, so that seemed a good sort of a career path to follow. And indeed, he proved right. I found statistics was a good area to be in, and I did a diploma in mathematical statistics. This was at the University of Cambridge in England. And from then I switched over to, not deliberately, but there was a good research studentship opportunity came up at the then very new University of Bath. And it was a rather interesting award in that it was a collaborative award with the then Imperial Chemical Industries. So I started working on simulation models at that stage. And this was in the very early days of SimScript, so I was one of the earliest users of SimScript.
Could you sort of tell us what the dates were that you did this?
For? Right, yes, of course, yes. I went up to Cambridge for my undergrad degree in 1965. I did the diploma in mathematical statistics in 68, and I obtained my PhD in 72, 73. I actually finished in 72 in the 3-year allotted span, because of the graduation time, I actually graduated with the PhD in 1973.
Okay, well, continue on about your working with the chemical industry that you describe,
and
doing statistics and how you got in simulation and about SimScript. I mean, this sounds exciting.
That was really quite interesting because, in fact, I had to go up to up in the north of England at the time, and I was actually treated as honorary management, so I always wore a suit up there. And they met me at the railway station with one of their chauffeur-driven cars, you know, with a chauffeur with a hat on, and you know, he took all the senior executives around, and I was whisked around in these sort of limousines. So it really was rather sort of an interesting sort of time. And I was working on industrial models of chemical plant processes, but very much from a stochastic point of view. And I did a lot of my SimScript runs on their mainframe machine after it finished processing all the accounts and things. So I spent a lot of happy evenings.
Do you remember what kind of computer that was?
I think they did have an IBM machine there. I subsequently, in my research, switched over to a University of London CDC machine. So these were just big sort of mainframe commercial machines.
Okay, so you did SimScript. Did you use some other computer language too for your work?
I started out with on the simulation side with SimScript, but I actually learned programming with an obscure Atlas Autocode, it was called in those days. This was going right back, and I then graduated over to Fortran. So most of my early programming was done in Fortran. I started out with punched tape, And then sort of switched over to the more sophisticated cards.
Well, you joined Jim and I, we know what that stuff is. So that
was sort of quite fun. And it was rather interesting arrangement because my first academic position was at the then University of Wales Institute of Science and Technology. This was in Cardiff. And the computing facilities we had there were modest, but we did have access to the University of London machine, and that was quite a powerful machine.
You were using CDC machine, were you using Fortran then?
I was using Fortran, but I was able to just download my programs using some kind of telephone link. And because it was actually strictly allocated in time, I was able to actually get faster turnaround than a lot of my sort of University of London friends who were stuck in behind long queues, and I was able to queue jump from Cardiff. So I got a regular turnaround on a daily basis.
Okay, so you started
in 73?
That was 73, yes, yes.
And so you were doing discrete event stochastic modeling?
Yes, that's right.
You weren't
yes.
doing continuous?
No, it's all discrete event. I've always been really discrete
event. Okay, so, you know, England's well known for their activity scanning and three-phase worldviews.
Yes,
were you using that, or were you using the VET worldview, which is more typical in SynScript in the United States? Do you remember?
Well, at that stage, because I was using, I wasn't sort of really too worried about the actual underlying structure. But when I came to start writing my own code, I did use a three-phase method. I was very much influenced by Tocker's book, The Art of Simulation, and you know that was really my sort of starting sort of.
Did you know Tocker?
Unfortunately, I did not meet up with him. Yes, he was. But I did subsequently sort of move to Southampton, where he had been the first professor of OR, really. So it was quite interesting. So I came after Tocker. There was Paul Williams. He was a linear programming person, and then I was the next one in line, really. So I'm sort of two away from Tocker in Southampton.
Well, you go back and continue your history. You know, Tocker was just a well-known person and interesting personality. So I was just wondering if you knew him.
The thing I found about his book really was that it was the first book on simulation that I really did read through really quite carefully, and I was particularly struck by the statistical methodology that he was discussing towards the end of the book. And he had so many really interesting insights into how really to apply statistical methodology in discrete event simulation, some of which was not, I think, really fully appreciated by other authors writing at the time, really. And so it was actually a very fertile field because of my background in statistics and in mathematics to see how more traditional statistical methods should be applied in the simulation context, where the experimental structure is so different from perhaps the more agricultural sort of type background that a lot of statistics actually had in those days.
Well, in the United States, there's a lot of early papers written in statistical analysis, but I don't recall there's been many papers written in the early days in simulation, for simulation statistical papers. So do you have any comments on that? I mean, apparently you got some great, saw that Tocker has some great ideas, but...
Yes, well, in fact, that's what allowed me get really into statistics, into simulation statistics, because things like sort of basic sort of regression models, meta models was really still not really properly established at that point. But it was clear that statistical models, particularly regression models, would be extremely useful in a lot of discrete event simulation analysis. So I did actually look at how, under normality assumptions, what sort of kind of results you might be able to sort of obtain, what kind of analysis you could set up, really.
Did you write any papers on that at the time?
I did write. One of my early papers was actually in that area, but unfortunately, actually, as I got some of the analysis. It was asymptotically correct, but it was not correct for the small sample sizes. So I sort of missed out there. So that was one of the areas where I think I should have done a rather better job. But in the end, I found a better niche in random variate generation, which again was really just in its infancy in those days. And I remember talking to a colleague who did work in operations research, and he actually wanted to generate gamma variates. And he said, I remember it was over a coffee break, that he just hadn't found a good gamma variate generator. And that set me sort of thinking about generation, and you know, it proved to be really a very sort of interesting particular sort of topic.
In this time frame again, was that when you're doing this?
This would be slightly later on. Probably I started on that probably in the mid 70s. So the first gamma variate generator paper that I wrote was, I think, something like 77.
Was there any other people doing statistical type of work in England or United Kingdom this time that you could interact with or do anything with?
Not really. In fact, I mean, one of the things that I found quite interesting. In fact, I was actually just looking at the first of the winter simulation conferences I came to, which was 1981. And I was just one of two Europeans to actually present a paper at that conference. The other person, I think, was from Austria. And I was certainly the only sort of person in the statistical area at all. And all the rest, I mean, you had quite a number of Canadians at that stage, obviously, but it was, you know, in terms of the international presence, it was practically non-existent.
Did you have much interaction with Peter Lewis at that time?
I got to know him fairly sort of rapidly. In fact, I mean, that first winter simulation conference I came to was actually at the invitation of someone working in variate generation, Pandu Tadikamala, and he introduced me to the group of people that were working in variate generation, and it was just such an eye-opening experience, really. And I really sort of got hooked on winter simulation at that point, because I realized it was a really very good forum for meeting people working in this sort of area and with thoughts and with a similar view of where statistics should be sort of going in simulation. So that worked out really very well. If I remember, one of the first people I actually met at that winter simulation conference was Bruce Schmeiser, and he came up and he introduced himself, and he looked at me and said, "Oh, you look rather younger than I thought you would be," which was a rather nice comment for him to make, really. So that was rather pleasing. It was one where it was really attended by pretty well all the people whose work that I sort of known through the published literature, but had not really sort of met any of them personally before, really. So it was really
so you were the basic statistical pioneer person in your country.
That was my feeling, really. Yes, I mean, shortly after, I suppose the other sort of main person working in this kind of area, though he went in a rather different direction, was Brian Ripley, and he was someone that I did actually have contacts with. He moved more on to other sort of statistical sort of areas, really, rather than the pure simulation one.
Okay, well, continue on your journey through life there in your professional world, please.
I, after sort of getting in finally into this sort of kind of area of research, at first in coming to the winter simulation conferences, I tend to come just about once every 2 years from that period from 81 to the early 90s. I was coming perhaps 1 year in two, but I really sort of got hooked on winter simulation conferences from 1992 onwards, and I think from 1992 onwards I've come to every single one.
Okay, so in the 80s, where were you working? What was your job location? What were you giving you your bucks to live on?
I was in I spent most of my academic career in Cardiff, in the University of Wales Institute of Science and Technology. But it was a rather interesting time there because there were actually the University of Wales was a federal institution in those days, made up of five different sort of colleges scattered throughout Wales, and two were in Cardiff. And we were thought of as being this sort of junior college, but in fact a merger took place. And when people who were putting the two colleges together started to investigate more carefully, it turned out that University of Wales Institute, UIS as it was called, we were actually a much better run ship. We were much tighter, we were financially in the black, the other college was heavily in debt, and in the end it was much more like a takeover by the supposedly junior sort of college. And so it then became really quite a big institution in its own right.
So that was in the 1980s then. You're talking about the Winter Simulation Conference.
Yes, and you were doing research
while you were teaching there.
Yes, that's right. And I sort of got sort of promotions there over that sort of period in the 80s. But in the end, I actually moved away from Cardiff because they didn't want to promote me anymore. So I just put myself on the open market, and I actually obtained a full chair at the University of Kent in Canterbury. And this was under open sort of competition. It was an openly advertised, established chair.
What year was that?
I think it must be 1990. I went to the University of Canterbury. But I didn't stay very long there, only 4 years, because I went there to head quite a strong management science group in the mathematics institute there. So there was a group of seven of us. In fact, I actually built up the group there, and we had very good undergraduate student intake, and the university decided that we might do even better in the business school. So we were moved to the business school, and I became director of the MBA and all sorts of strange things like that, which didn't really sort of, I found that I was doing not really sort of, felt I was really properly equipped to run fully. And then the a position came up in the University of Southampton, which was back in the School of Mathematics. So I went there, and that was... I must have gone to Kent in 94, and it was actually 99 that I went to Southampton. So it was 99 that I ended up in Southampton.
And what kind of courses were you teaching in the 80s, 90s? What were you teaching?
I taught an enormous range of courses. I did actually make a count of the courses I taught. It was something like sort of 40 different courses, all in the sort of statistics, mathematics, simulation area. But I even sort of taught. It was in the days when laptops were just sort of coming into existence, and I actually taught a course on micro programming. It was in the days of a very simple chip. It was a 6502 chip, and I really sort of knew how that worked, and I taught a full blown sort of course on that, of how it is actually sort of used, and how laptops were sort of constructed, really. And in fact, the sort of things I teach the students to work was to actually modify a lot of the early computer games by intercepting the interrupt messages and changing the firepower, things like that, really. So those are the sort of kind of practical things that I was actually sort of teaching. So it really did span really quite a wide range.
When you had become chair of the MBA program, were you teaching business school courses?
Well, I didn't have to teach any of the business, but I was involved with redesigning the MBA program. So that was... under my sort of chairmanship, that we actually reorganized the MBA program, and it seems to have gone very well there at Kent. After I left, you know, the school has continued to do very well there. So
okay, well, you get back telling your story about your research there, so maybe you could go back to the 80s and early 90s, start pursuing the paths of your research, if you would, please.
Well, on the research side, I suppose broadened my interest away from just simple varied generation. I became sort of more concerned with trying to use good statistical methodology in analysing simulation input and output. And that's been an area that I've been interested in ever since, really, particularly trying to take advantage of the fact that in simulation experimentation, one has a lot more control than in more sort of classical type of experimentation.
What year did you sort of leave the Rainer-Barry generation and move into, expand your horizon in other areas?
Well, I suppose it was like a lot of people, you know, just adrift, you know, away from very...
Yeah, but what time period would this be?
In terms of the time period, I suppose... It would be probably the early 90s that I started sort of moving away and looking at how statistics could be used. In fact, I remember one of the winter simulation conference papers I wrote. I actually used the Rao-Blackwell theorem in analyzing a certain sort of regression sort of type. Set up, and it was quite interesting how quite sort of theoretical results in statistics like the Rao-Blackwell actually play a part in simulation and analysis. So you know, that proved to be really sort of quite an interesting sort of, so that was sort of typical sort of kind of aspect that I found interesting. The other one, in fact, which actually stemmed back from Tocker days, was variance reduction. One of the things which is almost a throwaway in his Art of Simulation book was how really to apply antithetic variates. At that stage, I think it was not really, you know, very well understood how monotonicity was a really key factor in being able to apply antithetic variates effectively, so that if something which might work well for the mean, but if you're interested in say, variance, reduction in the variance of the variance, then straight antithetic methods would not work. In fact, would be actually counterproductive, because you'd be actually doubling your experimentation to no effect whatsoever, because basically things were being sort of folded over and you're just, you know, losing out on a lot of the accuracy. So those were the sort of things which, you know, I found sort of quite interesting, and one or two of my sort of early papers were really, you know, just simply pointing out this kind of aspect of how variance reduction needed to be applied more carefully. Another area which I found was quite interesting with the variance reduction was how variance reduction techniques would combine well with others and which would not be. And so, in fact, in one of my introductory tutorials on variance reduction, I did actually try and sort of approach variance reduction in that way, looking at which ones you could combine effectively and which methods would really be sort of counterproductive if you tried to combine them. So I was quite interested in stratification methods, and some of the things which I looked at early on were really sort of precursors to sort of Latin hypercube sort of type designs that started to be sort of developed round about that sort of period. So it was quite interesting to see how stratification sort of fitted in with that.
All right, we'll just continue on your history here. We periodically interrupt you to ask questions or document dates, but...
Right, yes, well, I suppose the variance reduction side I found interesting, but then slowly sort of moved into other areas like, I suppose, the more recent sort of areas I've been interested in, particularly are sort of resampling ideas like bootstrapping, and I feel it's something which is a really attractive kind of methodology which Well, I was thinking, in fact, that one of the things which I've still really somewhat sort of concerned about, that, and perhaps, you know, we might sort of be able to sort of look at this in a little bit more sort of detail, is how this kind of methodology has actually developed over the last 20 or sort of 30 years. And I feel that a lot of the kind of statistical methods, which I think, you know, perhaps deserve to be better used, still, despite everything, are still rather underused by, you know, the genuine practitioners. And I think an area like resampling, bootstrapping, is a very attractive one from the point of the introducing to genuine sort of practitioners, because it doesn't require a great deal of statistical or mathematical background to understand how it works, and when you actually use it, most people find it is actually surprisingly easy to implement, and the results are readily interpretable. There was a paper by I think it was Dave Goldsman and Barry Nelson and I think Alan Pitzker and I think there's another author, Apika, back in the late 90s, which was discussing simulation software, and they actually I feel set out three really important precepts that good software should satisfy: that it had to be readily understandable by the user, it had to be robust in use, so it could deal with a lot of general situations, and the results have to be readily interpretable by the user. And I just feel that those are, you know, really very sort of good criteria to judge a lot of statistical analysis software by. And a lot of the kind of things that I find I'm interested in, if one takes a classical mathematical approach, tends not to be so easy to communicate to the user. But areas like bootstrapping, I think, really do have a great advantage, and it's one which I feel that in the future, you know, hopefully would be more and more used as people realise quite how powerful.
How can we make this happen? I mean, why don't you write a book on it or something?
Well, I suppose that that's the I've tried to teach courses on this, and there's a course which I started in Southampton, which I now actually give on a more sort of nationwide basis. We have a residential course for PhD students, which is a week-long sort of course held once every 2 years in the UK now. And one of these courses is on simulation, and I teach quite a large part of this course, and there I do actually stress this kind of analysis, and I try and illustrate it by a lot of working examples. I'm a great believer in not specialist software, but in the use of spreadsheets. So a lot of my examples are developed through spreadsheet analysis, because it's something which, you know, everyone is familiar with, and it's one which I think sort of is very sort of helpful in breaking down the kind of sort of barriers that can otherwise be there, even though they're not real barriers, they appear from the user point of view to be when they're looking at more apparently sophisticated statistical sort of techniques.
Well, you mentioned one look at some methodology you think it should be more used by practitioners, aren't
you? Yeah.
So you mentioned bootstrapping and resampling that. So is there some other areas that you think have similar?
I suppose the two main sort of breakthroughs really in the last 20 years on the statistical side is the bootstrapping, and the other really is the use of Bayesian sort of type methods, particularly the kind of Monte Carlo Markov chain sort of methods, where again it's computer intensive, but it allows you to explore really quite complex situations which otherwise would be very difficult to handle using more classical analysis. So I think that's another area that is clearly has burgeoned. And those two, I think, bootstrapping and Bayesian analysis done numerically are for me the sort of big breakthroughs which still need further developing and promotion in the simulation sort of community. Well, but I think it probably will come.
Well, I mean, don't you think that the proliferation of cheap, powerful computing has really been the thing that's made Markov chain Monte Carlo and resampling methods actually feasible to use?
Very, very much so. I think that's exactly right, Jim. One of the sort of big sort of changes that I've seen really is the move away from sort of mainframe. So everyone does a lot of this sort of kind of quite computer intensive work just on their own sort of laptops, and it's something which I think has sort of opened the door to.
But I'd like to follow up on your comments about resampling versus Markov chain Monte Carlo evasion methods. I completely agree with you that resampling methods, one would think by this time would have been widely adopted by practitioners.
Yes.
Because it is a fairly attractive method that's easy to understand.
Yes.
But by contrast, it seems to me that Bayesian methods and Markov chain Monte Carlo require substantially more sophistication. So I'm sort of curious, at least that's the way it appears to me.
I'm sort of
curious to know what your take on the barriers or why it is that resampling methods haven't been adopted on a larger scale by practitioners. Do you have any sense of that?
I think my feeling is that it's to do with the way it's sort of implemented, and which is why I sort of feel that and I've sort of spoken to companies like Simulate, the ones who actually produce simulations of software, to try and encourage them to incorporate more sort of advanced sort of statistical methods. I feel one of the problems, in fact, has been to do with the statistics community itself. That I encountered this in my sort of own teaching, when I actually showed them spreadsheets, I can see that the more sort of mathematically orientated ones, they frown on this. They don't think this is a proper tool to be using for proper statistical analysis. They would much prefer to use bespoke statistical packages, and they talk about use of S plus or statistical packages or even R. And I can see the attraction to them because R, if you understand it, it makes it a very sort of flexible and powerful method for tackling difficult problems. But to me, really, this is not at all attractive to a user. An R is an extra sort of level of complication that they just don't want to have, which is why I've tried to sort of push Excel sort of spreadsheets much more, because you can actually set up. And the other aspect of it is that R is actually rather slow when it comes to analysing really large data sets. And nowadays, a lot of my sort of colleagues who are dealing with real world sort of problems, they're dealing with massive data sets, really. And when you look at R-based sort of tools, they just can't really sort of cope with it. A colleague, he's looks at sort of credit risk sort of problems, and his some of his data sets are not megabytes, they're gigabytes in size, really, and I think
or terabytes
or even yes it's just massive, really. So I think, in fact, that's an area which I think would be actually very interesting to try and sort of see develop more fully, appropriate sort of methods for handling these sort of real big sort of data sets, and having appropriate software on the right sort of platform to meet the criteria enunciated by Goldsman and out as being something which is very transparent, robust, and easy to interpret. And I think that's still in a way we have some way to go. One of the things which I found quite interesting in some of my consultancy work is how in certain areas simulation, because it has been sort of adopted, has become much better integrated into the sort of almost the decision sort of making sort of process. It's part of the sort of decision sort of mechanism that is actually used. You can see it in some sort of real time sort of applications like traffic control, where a simulation model sometimes is really at the heart of trying to predict what traffic flow would be like, and it's actually sort of built into the actual system. One which I found particularly interesting, because one of my research students went to work from was in Formula One racing, something which not perhaps quite as well known in the States in other parts of the world, but it certainly has a huge international following. And he was very successful because he actually developed simulation software to run in real time during the races to predict pit stops, things like that. And he was very influential. In fact, he's been sort of headhunted time and again by Formula One. He's now actually working for Red Bull, who are the current world leaders, the world champions, both in terms of the manufacturer and in terms of...
Well, you're still excited about the student, but one thing you haven't mentioned discussing your history is colleagues, in terms of students that you work with or colleagues that... other institutions in your professional career that you, you know, work with and are proud of, or whatever you like.
Well, yes.
Could
well,
you make some comments
of course, yes. I mean, this is, I think, one of the sort of big strengths of the Winter Simulation Conference, that what I found was a conference which was large enough to have very sort of diverse, interesting tracks. But in my sort of own area of analysis methodology, and to a lesser extent modeling methodology, I found there's a sort of good core of regular attendees, of people whose work I sort of encountered, and people whose work I highly sort of respected, people like yourselves, and one person I did collaborate work with. So Jack Kleinen, again, someone who's promoted statistical aspects very sort of strongly.
How did your relationship with Jack Kleinen come about? How did you and he start doing work together?
Well, it was quite amusing, really, because I encountered, you know, one of his sort of early Marcel Decker books on the use of statistics. I can't remember the title now, but it was clearly statistics applied in the simulation context. And I looked at some of the parts of it quite carefully. And in fact, there was one area where the results that they had were okay, but in fact, they were not quite as precise as what he appeared to be claiming. So I actually wrote to him, so I said, didn't know that this is perhaps a being so worded slightly strongly, and we had quite an animated discussion about it, and in the end he did actually agree that because I was able to come up with one or two little counterexamples to show how the thing could not work in quite the way that was appearing in school. But nevertheless, it was a very amicable sort of discussion as it should be, really. So I got to know him sort of through that encounter, and I can't remember where I sort of met him again, but he certainly did invite me to go to Tilburg, and then we just started sort of working on
what time period was that?
Yeah, when did your collaboration really begin in earnest, I guess?
I'm just trying to think. It was certainly in Cardiff days, so it must be in sort of the middle 80s. I think that was when we were sort of began.
Well, you and he have written quite a number of papers together, though, haven't
we,
you?
We had two, I suppose the two that were sort of particularly pleasing was one was in operations research on highly heteroscedastic queues, and that was quite sort of an interesting result in trying to sort of design experiments to study waiting times. It turned out that the design points that one should choose, if you knew anything about the kind of waiting time behavior, well, was not perhaps quite as intuitive as you might sort of think. So that was an intriguing aspect. And the other one was one which got us very much into sort of bootstrapping. In fact, it was in the collaboration with Jack that we started discussing bootstrapping really quite seriously. And I think we both became really quite keen on bootstrapping as a result of that sort of collaboration. So that was the management science paper which looked at bootstrapping aspects. So that was a very nice sort of collaboration to have. I'm just sort of thinking in terms of collaborations. I think the more recent collaborations have been with colleagues in Northwestern. So Bruce Ankerman, who's someone who's started attending with the simulation conference meetings fairly regularly, who's really an engineer, but he's become very interested in the methodological side of simulation statistics. So we've been working on aspects like sequential bifurcation and that sort of kind of.
Let me sort of go back in early history again and see if you know some of the early people like Clemison or Matheson or Baxton, or
it's rather strange actually. That there seemed to be sort of somewhere in the UK. I would have to say that the simulation folk that I sort of met have not been so much the ones that were like Clemenson. Quite a number of those were, I felt much more on the sort of modelling methodology sort of side, and developing appropriate sort of simulation sort of languages, really. And that was an area that I suppose I wasn't sort of so interested in, really. So my contacts were much more on the statistical side with people like sort of Brian Ripley, though we never actually sort of collaborated together. And it was then perhaps again in the UK I then sort of got more into the more sort of practical sort of end with people who are perhaps at that stage not so well known in the States. I suppose I should say that at one period I did a lot of consultancy work in the simulation area, but very distinct from discrete event simulation. So it was an area which I've not really sort of ever sort of written papers for winter simulation on. It was actually much more to do with computer generated imagery, the sort of graphical side. So at one stage I did really quite a lot of work in that really in a rather different aspect of simulation.
Did you publish papers in those later?
I did a certain amount, but a lot of the work was very sort of commercially orientated, and in fact I was the research director of a Norwegian company, in fact, who at the time, I think they probably still are, were the world leaders in ship handling simulator construction. So I did a lot of really quite commercial work for them on the computer generated imagery side. It was again just a very opportune time when the cost of graphics chips had sort of come down for them to be able to actually develop really, you know, very attractively sort of priced systems which the maritime colleges were able to buy. And in that sort of particular sort of period, I remember one amazing year where there were 49 contracts worldwide for ship handling simulators, and this Norwegian company pretty well sort of took the corner of the whole market. I think they got 48 of the 49 contracts, and it was and again it was using some very talented research students who developed, you know, some of this software. So that was much more like sort of computer games. It was we were sort of developing pretty well from scratch basically what you see from the view of the bridge. A bit like the marine equivalent of flight simulators. Flight simulators are obviously highly developed by that stage, but the marine equivalent had not been, and the kind of things that we developed were sort of from sailing into harbours, things like that. So.
Yeah, but do you have any comments to make on simulation societies, your activities in the Operational Research Society or anything? I mean, were you active or you saw simulation being active in these communities?
Well, I was did do quite a lot of work for the UK Simulation Society. Now, this was not really so much in discrete event simulation. It straddled quite a lot of continuous simulation as well. So I put in a fair amount of time on that side of things, and in fact, I was actually chairman of the UK Simulation Society for a period. Again, this would have been in the mid 80s mainly. Perhaps a little bit later than that, in the early 90s.
Now, how does that relate to this, to the Operation Research Society, or is that a separate organization?
A completely separate organization. Yes. The Operational Research Society. I mean, it had an interest in simulation, but because I was really sort of involved with the UK Simulation Society, I didn't try to promote simulation so much in the Operational Research Society. That came rather later with the, dare I say it, almost the next sort of generation, people like Stuart Robinson and Simon Taylor, who actually set up the relatively new journal of simulation under the auspices of the Operation.
So is the United Kingdom Simulation Society still active today?
It is still active. It tends to be more focused on the engineering side. It does have regular conferences. I've tended to drop out of it because the focus has moved away. They're much more into sort of engineering types of problems, looking at computer sort of networks, that side of things. And I think its appeal seems to be sort of more towards the sort of Far East, really. So they actually have, I think, regular meetings in collaboration with colleagues in Malaysia or in Thailand. So
how about this? You're being trained as a statistician anyway. So
yes.
How about the statistical societies? Do you have any? Have you had any relationship or simulation involved with any of those in England?
Well, yes. I mean, I suppose for me, it's I always wonder in the UK, you know, whether people think of me as being a statistician or as a simulation sort of worker. I think I'm probably rather sort of better known on the simulation side. Mainly, I suppose, because I've in terms of focus, have spent much more sort of time coming to winter simulation sort of meetings, really. So the Royal Statistical Society, of which I'm a fellow, I only go to their meetings occasionally because that's really very much mainstream statistics, really. And
do they have a section that's sort of like a special interest group on simulation?
No, not really. No, I don't think so. No,
does the Operational Research Society of the UK have a separate section like the Informed Simulation Society as a part of Informs?
Well, I think yes, it does now in that the Operational Research Society there's a simulation working group. And it actually has regular workshops. These are biennial meetings, these have become really quite well attended, and they have probably more sort of European rather than but certainly people from the States have sort of, you know, come.
You're talking about the biannual.
That's right, dissemination. Yes, you came to
one of them, yeah,
yes,
earlier.
That's right, yes. So those still seem to be going strong, really. And that's really very much under the auspices of the Operational Research Society. So that's the in fact, it'd be quite interesting now that with the simulation conferences come to Germany. I think there is some sort of talk among some of the UK people attending to wonder whether, you know, at some stage that there should be perhaps one held in the UK somewhere.
You mean the WSC?
Yes, the WSC.
Well,
yes,
somebody's
yes.
got to step up and start pushing
yes,
for it. The people in Sweden are pushing for one.
They want to have the 2018 conference in Gothenburg, Sweden.
Okay, right. Yes.
Yeah, but see, you got to get some of these young guys
yes.
to.
What about the temperatures side of things? Because one of the things that I think is sort of clearly illustrated by coming to Berlin is that, you know, there are sort of potential problems
yes.
if you have it too far north, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know,
well, when this was suggested to me, my immediate reaction
yeah.
was, well, if you want to have it, you know, in Europe,
yes.
the natural place that would come to mind would be London.
Yes, exactly. Yes, yes. That would be my sort of feeling. Because, you know, it's you know, really much milder. Really, you know, it would be very unusual to have you know, conditions like this in early December. Not unknown, but you know, one would be very unfortunate.
Well, you have some other topics.
I'd just like to follow up on any recollections you might have of any of the people that. We're no longer able to discuss, to interview, because they passed away. For instance,
yeah.
Jeffrey Gordon. Did you have any interactions with him?
No, not a great deal. I mean, I did sort of meet him occasionally at WinterSim meetings, but no, not someone that I had a great deal of contact with. I mean, I was sorry to hear of the passing of Jerry Banks, because, you know, that was someone that I did know.
Did you have much interaction with Reuven Rubinstein?
Not a great deal. Again, I did sort of meet him on occasion, but not a great deal.
Now, Jack apparently had a fairly fruitful collaboration.
By that, Jack means
Jack
Klein.
Klein. Was still in progress when Reuven passed away.
Yes.
Well, I've got one other thing I'd like to. Well, I mean, I'll mention a couple of other people just because any recollections you might have or any interactions you might have had with them. Did you have any with Ole Johan Dahl or Kristen Nygaard?
No.
Okay. The only final thing I'd like to ask you is to sort of get your take for the benefit of younger people who have an interest in the field of simulation, what advice you might have for them about careers in the field, either in academia or in industry, or just any general comments you have on things that, on the basis of your experience, they ought to pay attention to in trying to, you know,
well,
make a mark in this field.
Well, I've certainly sort of found particularly the kind of contacts I've made through the Winter Simulation Conference very fruitful ones from a sort of personal point of view. In terms of advice, I think it is. I've certainly found it useful having been sort of trained in mathematics and in statistics. But that's because of the kind of area that I'm in, the analysis methodology, and I found that having that sort of kind of background allows one to look at problems in a much more insightful way. So from that sort of point of view, it's an important, I think, sort of requirement, really, to make really sort of good progress on the more theoretical side of analysis methodology. But I think because of the way that simulation, I feel, might sort of develop in the future, I think there are lots of quite exciting new sort of areas which could do with a lot more sort of work and research, really in terms of promoting the use of better sort of techniques and in developing better tools for doing this. One aspect I think could be greatly improved is just the visual impact of presenting results, really. Again, through the Formula One racing, that's something which I certainly sort of found quite interesting, was that at race time, the engineers, they don't look at figures. Everything is actually presented on screens in colour. You know, it's quite amazing, really, that when you actually see the real-time operation backing up the actual racers themselves. It's all sort of back, usually in a home base, and there'd be something like so 20-30 engineers in a big room full of TV displays, and all the displays are highly dependent on color in order to give the impact of what is actually sort of happening. So aspects like that I think are really sort of quite interesting ones to actually explore and sort of try and develop and produce appropriate sort of software for. And I think that's the sort of kind of innovation which, if it was sort of done in an effective way, could really lead to much better acceptance of perhaps what are underlying quite sophisticated sort of techniques. So that's the sort of thing which I think is of interest. The other sort of areas are much more the better sort of integrated integration of actual simulation within sort of decisions for making sort of processes. And I think there's really quite a lot of work that can be sort of done, not perhaps people who are necessarily mathematically sort of trained, but who are sort of interested in trying to understand what the issues are with. I was just talking to a colleague, Sally Brailsford, who's done a lot of work in healthcare, and she was saying that the clinicians are beginning to understand the use of simulation, but when it comes to the management, the higher level, there's still real sort of ignorance of how powerful simulation is, really. And so that even though people are beginning to think of simulation as being a method of first resort, particularly for more complicated systems, I think still in terms of a lot of management, simulation is still something which is really just for backroom boys to play around with, really, and not something which should be much more central to their decision-making process. So I think that the sort of areas which I think are potentially very fruitful ones to come in the next phase in the development of winter simulation might be very much in these sort of kind of areas.
Yeah, one topic we didn't touch on is simulation publications. Were you an editor or department area or area editor or just a referee for journals? I was wondering if you got any.
Well, I was the editor of one of the Institute of Mathematical Applications journals in the UK, the IMA journals. There's actually quite a series that was produced, and the one I was involved with was what called Mathematics Applied in Business and Industry. And this was really not a very well organized a journal. It fell between two stools, really. There were a lot of engineers interested in it and people on the management side, and as a result, it didn't really sort of work very well. So I actually got the IMA to rethink it, and in the end, it was completely revamped. And I was one of the founding editors of the now what's called the IMA Journal of Management Mathematics. I actually said that it really should have perhaps go one way or the other, and I felt that the more operational research management science direction was the right one to go for. So I was one of the another OR colleague, Tony Christo, who was sadly passed away a while back. We set it up, and that seems to be going really quite well now. So that was probably where most of my sort of editorial and journal work was done in setting up and getting that journal going.
Okay, what topic? Have you got any topics that we have not touched on that you'd like to discuss with us?
No, I think I think we've certainly sort of touched on pretty well. There are one or two sort of technical ones like sort of simulation optimization. It's something which I find sort of quite interesting that even though it's a topic that appears regularly and has a high profile at Windesim, that I'm not convinced that optimization is actually used a great deal in industry. My feeling that the Operation Research Society's logo of the science of better is probably a better approach. You know, rather than trying to do things optimally, just doing things better is quite sufficient, really. So that's a small take on just.
Okay, was there another topic, or is that?
No, that's
Jim. What do you have to say?
Nothing else.
Well, Russell, we thank you very much for a very enjoyable hour and a quarter here of interview, and thank you very much for being willing to do this.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It was great talking with you and discussing all these issues.